Hi, I'm Bob Tabor with www.learnvisualstudio.net, where I teach beginners the skills they need to get their first software development job building Windows and web apps at the world's best companies as quickly as possible. So in this lesson, we want to talk about the package.appx manifest file that we've seen sitting here in the Solution Explorer, but we've never dared open it up or make any changes to it just yet. What I want to do is talk about it at a high level. For example, it contains metadata about your application. In other words, it describes your app to the operating system, including the friendly name of the app, any icons and images that'll be used on the start page, what the phone's hardware must support in order for your app to work on that phone, and so on. So I just want to take a quick tour of this package.appx manifest file. Admittedly, this will lack the context that is probably really necessary in order to understand how each of these values play into the larger picture of building an app. However, and why you might want to use some of these settings during the course of the lifecycle of the app's construction. But if nothing else, this will give you some insight into what's possible whenever you're building apps for the Windows Phone, even if I don't demonstrate those specifics on how to implement a given feature. At least you'll know, oh yeah, I think I remembered that there was something about that in the appx manifest. That's why it doesn't do this. Or if you're reading a tutorial, at least you'll know what to expect whenever they tell you to go into the package appx manifest and do blah. Okay. So first of all, as you can see, this file sits here in your Solution Explorer. It's actually used during the compilation process. As it compiles your source code into a series of assemblies and then packages all up into a deployment file. So the install package, the deployment file, will have the file extension appx. And so that manifest file, the appx manifest, introduces, introduces the phone to your app. Which assemblies are contained in the appx file? Which asset file should be used for the start app, start and the app screen to allow the user to click on them and open up your app? What's the app's name? What are the features that the phone uses, and so on? So this is why it's sometimes referred to as metadata, as I referred to it at the very outset of this series of lessons. So whenever you open it up in the main area, I'll just double click it here, and you can see that there's this friendly tabbed designer that allows you to change the various parts of the app, and we'll come back to this view in just a moment. But for now, what I want to do is shut that down. I want to right-click on this and select Open With, and I'm going to choose the XML text editor and click OK. And I want to make sure, first of all, to emphasize that you do not want to make any changes here. If you corrupt this file somehow, that designer is not going to pop back up nicely for you, and that's ultimately where you need to be working in. However, as you can see, the package.appx manifest file is simply an XML file that contains the various settings, and then that friendly designer that we first opened up merely allows you to make changes to those settings in a more friendly way rather than going to have to dig in through the XML, potentially making spelling mistakes that would prevent the app from being compiled and so on. So at any rate, you're going to see essentially the file in its naked form. I'd recommend that you don't change this file, at least not until you have a very specific reason to do so. So let's close this tab, and if you're asked to save any changes, make sure you say no, don't save any changes. So now let's reopen the package .appx manifest file property designer, and what I want to do is briefly review the purpose of each of the settings in each of the tabs, at least at a high level. Frankly, most of the settings are self-explanatory, and yet the nuanced reasons why you might choose to change each of these settings could require more time than I have in this lesson or even a series of lessons. My goal here, again, is just to do a quick review to call your attention to the fact that all these settings exist and where you would change them. And so if you're following some other tutorial in the future, you'll have some idea of where to look for some of these settings. As you can see, there are, seven different tabs: application, visual assets, requirements, capabilities, declarations, content URIs, and packaging. And so we'll start with this application tab. I would classify this as a catch-all for the properties that don't fit nicely into the other tabs. Many of the settings are utilized by the operating system, such as the display name and the default language and things of that nature. Also, the supported rotations of the app, whether or not your app will allow the user to rotate the phone and it should change and respond to that change in orientation, or if you don't want to allow that. Also, it will allow you to set whether or not allow storage to SD cards. You might want to prevent users from doing this to prevent them from taking that SD card out of one phone, putting it in another phone, and then copying that app off or using it on a different phone, a way of copy protection, I guess you could say. Below that, you have the notification section. This will allow you to tell the operating system whether you intend to use toasts and lock screen notifications in your app. So a toast displays at the very top of the screen to notify users of an event, such as a news or a weather alert, like you see the photo here. A toast notification displays for about 10 seconds unless the user dismisses it with a flick to the right. If the user taps the toast, by default, your app's start screen launches, or you can choose to specify which screen of your app will launch. A lock screen notification, as you can see here on this slide, allows you to update the lock screen with text images or numbers that are usually indicating that there's a number of updated items that the user should be aware of. So your users can choose to customize this area with any eligible third-party apps that they choose. So as a developer, you can design your app to be an app that the phone can choose to customize the lock screen notifications area. So the lock screen's app icon, the count, and text are pulled directly from the app's default tile. The info appears on the lock screen only if the default tile contains this info. For example, a count will appear on the lock screen only if the tile displays a count of items that need to be addressed or looked at or new items and things of that nature. Okay, so that is, in a nutshell, basically the catch-all for the entire application. Next up is the app's visual assets. And we're going to use this a little bit later for when we build a real app to change the tiles, the splash screen, and more. Notice that there are different sizes that are required for different states of the tile, whether on the start page or the apps page on the phone. So on the start page, the user can decide whether the app should be small, medium, or large. So you need to provide different assets for those three different sizes. The next tab, the requirements tab, is for hardware requirements. For example, if you were building an app that needed the NFC capability, you would click this requirements option and you would tell the phone that in order for this to work correctly, my app to work correctly, it needs that requirement on the phone, that capability of the phone to be present. So the next tab is the capabilities tab. A capability is a request for permission. So suppose that your app needs or it wants to access a given feature of the phone or the data on a given phone. You can't just as a developer go grab that capability or that asset. You need to ask permission of the user of the phone because it's usually handling some potentially private information that the user may not want to share with just any app, like the user's current location or any of its contacts. I don't want just any app knowing who my friends are, okay? So I may deny the app that capability. The next tab is declarations. So think of declarations as other ways that the phone's operating system can execute or can enable certain features of your application. So for example, we might want to allow our application to execute a background task every half hour or so, and that background task will change the phone's lock screen image. So in that scenario, we would add a background task declaration and configure the timer, the timer, the executable that we want to be run, the entry point into that executable, and so on, to launch that part of your app that changes the image on the lock screen every half hour, okay? Or in the case of the, let's see, the let's remove that and go up to, or try to remove it. All right, there we go. Let's go back to the top here and go to the file open picker and add that one. And in this particular case, we might want to allow other apps to use our app to choose a given file type that's managed by our app. When somebody goes to open a file, maybe it's a file that belongs to our app and we want to allow a different visualization for the selection of that template, we're telling the operating system, the phone operating system, to whenever a file open operation happens, include us in the mix, okay? All right, so let me go ahead and remove that and move on to the next tab, which is content URIs. The idea behind this is actually pretty cool. In a few lessons, we're gonna learn about the web view control. So it can open up and display web pages. We'll be using it to display web pages that are hosted locally in the apps project. However, you can also open up external websites as well. Now, if that external website happens to be running JavaScript that executes a command called window.external.notify, then that external website can pass data into your phone app. And so the trick is that you have to indicate right here which URIs that you want to allow to pass information into your app right here on this page. You would put in the URIs that you want to accept data from. And that it has to also be one with an SSL certificate, just a requirement. So on your side, then, as a developer of the phone app, you would handle the webview underscore script notify event and retrieve the data that's being sent. And then finally is the packaging tab. And as the instructions say at the very top of this tab, they deal with the information about packaging the app for deployment. The package name is a globally unique identifier, or a GUID, that differentiates this app from all other apps that were ever created by the phone, no matter which user, at least ideally, as well as the display name, the version, the current version of the app that you're publishing. As you make bug fixes and stuff, you'd want to come in here and increase the build number, the minor version, and potentially the major version of the app, okay? And also other things like the publisher display name that you want to be seen in the store and things of that nature, okay? The last setting, this generate app bundle, allows you to split up your app into multiple parts so that it takes up less space and requires less time to download for the end user. So you might choose to do this if you're targeting multiple languages and you have image assets that target different screen sizes. And so you would split up your app appropriately into a series of packages that segment those resources. So in these cases, the end user would only download the package that applies to their language and their screen size, and not all of them that you've made available, like a German large screen versus the Spanish version of your app small screen, okay? All right, so in a nutshell, that's all the settings that you can make in the package appx manifest file. At the outset, I said that the value of this lesson is calling to your attention the fact that these settings actually exist and how you'd go about changing them if you ever needed a given feature. Furthermore, it helps you see what's possible. The features that you may want to employ in your app, even if we don't demonstrate them in this series of lessons, at least you know the kinds of things that your app is capable of, and you can go and research more about those through MSDN articles and so on. Okay, so we're at the point now where we're confident enough we can build our first real app. In the next lesson, we're going to build a simple app, but it's going to employ a lot of the ideas that we've been building on up until now, so that's pretty exciting, and we'll see you there. Thank you.